Generations of Americans got their instructions on proper behavior and manners from Miss Manners and Emily Post. Emily Post herself died in 1960, but her dedication to manners and politeness continues through the Emily Post Institute, which weighs in on etiquette and behavior in modern settings, like the use of cell phones. Nearly all of us have them, like it or not, but we can still display some manners in their use. Let's hear how from Daniel Post Senning. He's the great-great-grandson of Emily Post and the co-author of Emily Post's Etiquette 18th Edition and The Etiquette Advantage in Business 3rd Edition. He's also the author of Manners in a Digital World, Living Well Online. And together with his cousin Lizzie Post, Dan answers 21st century etiquette questions on Awesome Etiquette, a podcast from American Public Media. So obviously across many media avenues. Thanks for joining us today, Daniel Post Senning.
Good morning, Jeffrey. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, the Institute looks like a total family affair as I look at the people involved with it.
The Emily Post Institute is a family business, a five-generation family business.
That is pretty amazing. So you got cousins and second cousins and all manner of people there, huh?
Absolutely. Aunts and uncles. Hopefully someday some sixth-generation participation as well.
I wonder how hard you have to work at the Institute to make sure that manners are still acknowledged in today's world. I think they can seem, I don't know, probably uncool or fuddy-duddy-like or something.
Well, one of the great advantages to having been part of a business that's done this work for generations is that we've seen that the interest continues to renew, and each generation sort of absorbs and adopts what is important from the generations that have preceded it and invents some of its own.
Are there do you ever get to register shock? I mean, given how many generations of the family and the business and therefore how many generations observing people's behavior, I just wonder if there's still a capacity for like, oh, wow, well, people didn't used to do that.
Of course, and at the same time, I think that as much as things change, human nature stays remarkably the same. And I think that sort of with that renewing comes a pretty much a continual process of challenge and recovery. And the particulars of it, I think, could surprise and delight, but I think the shock and awe is less than you might imagine.
So, just in general, I mean, do people feel a need still to, I mean, if they're still buying your books and listening to your podcasts, obviously they still feel a need to at least get some level of politeness between people.
Absolutely. Emily had herself had a real clarity of vision. She said etiquette is about how people's lives touch one another. It's not a set of rules. It's about human relationships. And I think human relationships are always important to people. People are always curious about how to interact, how to behave themselves. I think those are some of the most interesting questions. I love looking at etiquette through the lens of self-improvement and self-assessment rather than the lens of judgment of others. And I think that in that capacity, it's always incredibly useful and helpful.
So, in your quest to examine manners in a digital world, I wonder if before we go off into cell phones, whether the bigger issue might actually be with the way that people treat each other online in chat rooms and forums and that sort of thing.
There is no question that new communication and new technology is the area or the territory of etiquette that I think is the most challenging because it's so new and it's a place where the standards and norms that we expect they just aren't as established, and they establish themselves pretty quickly. It's amazing to me how quickly social expectations start to form anytime you have people interacting, but that is one of the new frontiers. That is definitely the area of etiquette that I think is the real particular challenge for our generation.
When I think about Emily Post's lifetime herself, I realize that she would have been around when telephones were coming into broad use, also got to see radio come into use and got to see television come into use, and so got to watch technology affect people in her own realm.
She absolutely did, and she was a bit of a technophile herself. She liked new technology. She loved her radio and her radio programs. She made the allowance for the use of hello, which became a convention that was introduced on the television to enter sort of everyday colloquial use, conversational use. So she was no stranger to the way new communication technology impacted our lives.
We're talking about etiquette and electronics. We'll be getting into cell phones specifically in a moment with Daniel Post Senning, the great-great-grandson of Emily Post. He's at the Emily Post Institute. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange and maybe share some examples of ways in which people have used cell phones really politely or not. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. You know, we've had cell phones for a generation plus now. So, I mean, it seems like we're getting used to them enough. I mean, are we, how would you gauge the state of cell phone etiquette at the moment, Daniel?
I think you're right. I think after, you know, 10 years after the introduction of the iPhone, we're at a place where I think a lot of the social expectations are starting to shake out, are pretty clear to people. Although surveys will show that the vast majority of people say they've experienced or witnessed a rude use of a cell phone recently, but a much, much smaller percentage of people will cop to that kind of behavior themselves. And I think there is a sort of a moral to the story that even though we know what's expected or we think we know what's expected, that a willingness to apply those standards to ourselves, to dehabitualize our use of these devices, to stay aware of how we use them, is really the challenge that all of us face.
And I noticed that one of the first recommendations made is to be in control of your phone. Don't let it control you.
Absolutely. And it's easier said than done. We all are programmed to respond to these devices. We practice the act of responding to these chimes or these vibrations and getting information that matters to us or connecting to people we care about. And it doesn't take long before we even start to anticipate that feeling of connection or satisfaction. Most people have experienced the ghost ring of a cell phone or felt like they've felt that vibration in their pocket when it wasn't happening. And to me, that's such a clear indicator of how habitual our use becomes of these devices. And it really is a challenge. I like to say avoid that cell phone security blanket. Try not to just let it jump into your hand anytime you find yourself in a new or uncomfortable or situation or even a quiet moment that you feel the need to fill it up, and also to leave it behind when you're really not going to need it. If there's a place or a time in your life where it really wouldn't be appropriate to use it, why not just lock it in the glove compartment or maybe even leave it home for an afternoon?
That is shocking to a lot of people, though, isn't it?
It can be difficult. The one of the things I read recently was about how many people bring their cell phone or their mobile device to bed with them. And the discipline that it takes to say to yourself, you know, just for these couple hours or for this period of time or for however long I'm going to be with this person, I'm really going to commit to being there, to staying present in that moment and to not be interrupted for that time is a real discipline.
Is that a generational split, though, I wonder? I mean, if you're going to find people taking phones to bed, they're generally going to be under the age of 30, I would think. That'd be my guess.
The particular study that I was reading was about teens, mm-hmm. but I think it's a pretty broad phenomenon. I mean, how many people use their, I mentioned the iPhone, it goes so far beyond even just the connection with others, the cell phone, but how many people use that phone as an alarm clock? And I'm by no means saying that there isn't a place for these devices in our life. I think they're incredibly useful, and I think I liked your call for polite use examples as well. Because the phone itself isn't rude or polite. It really is how we use it that matters. So I think it's important to emphasize the good behavior and the good practices. And part of that, though, is taking control of that device and really being intentional about how you use it.
I laughed a bit when you mentioned the phantom ring because I was just remembering, as you were saying it, about feeling one of those on the way to work this morning as the car throttled up and mm-hmm. you know, your hand jerks to your hip. But, oh, wait, that wasn't what that was. That was just the car vibrating. But then I noticed that it seems like part of the set of issues that may have disappeared, at least become somewhat less with cell phones, is that people do use them for speech less these days. Has that helped remove some of the situations like people sitting in restaurants going, "Oh yeah, I'm having a great meal here with my friends."
It helps, but it's also a double-edged sword. Sort of a second-level etiquette tip is beware the substitution mentality, mm-hmm. that it's not always appropriate to text when you wouldn't take a call. And there are times where that substitution mentality really works, and I'm thinking about public transport or somewhere where you're with a lot of other people. Your airplane has just landed, and instead of calling the person in the cell phone lot who's waiting for that message to know when to come pick you up, you send them a text. It's less intrusive, less disturbing to the people around you. But when you're sitting down in that restaurant, when you're having a meal with other people, I like to say that it's really about keeping your attention on the people that you're with. And the text can take your attention away just like your phone call can. You're not as subtle as you think when you're sending that text in an important meeting at work or when you're sitting at dinner with your family. And you say, you know, I know that it wouldn't be appropriate for me to take a phone call right now and talk, but I can just fire off this email, just fire off this quick text. And I use a little shorthand for myself because there are times when using a phone in a meeting or at dinner might even be appropriate. I say if it's about the shared experience that you're having with the people that you're with, if you're looking up the movie that you're about to all go together or getting that important document that you're going to share with people in the meeting, that's an appropriate use. But if it's going to take your attention elsewhere, maybe hold yourself accountable and don't send that text. Don't fall prey to that substitution mentality.
Right, but the shared thing can also be like, you know, well, okay, Rachel is finally telling us where she is, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so you mentioned the business context here, and I know you're big on the business stuff. You've written a couple of books now on the Etiquette Advantage in Business, three editions of that. So particular to business meetings, is that partly the call of the environment of the company, or should that also be something within the realm of the individual to say, hey, you know, I need this information, so I need to take this right now. I need to text this right now.
You definitely want to respect organizational culture. You want to have some situational awareness. Is this a weekly sales meeting where there's an established protocol or standard where people take calls, jump in and out, or is it the most important meeting of the year with your president, CEO, or your number one client? And having that awareness, I think, is important. I also think that a lot of good etiquette is based on things that we think we should have learned when we're very young, when we're children, and that ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure concept, I think, is a good one to take into any meeting. If you're going to be using your device, if you need to be responsible to outside communication, letting people know ahead of time, setting that expectation shows awareness of others, shows respect for others and consideration for their time. So just letting people know, you know, I've got a really important email that I expect at some point in the next hour. I'm going to be checking my phone periodically. I'll step outside if I need to answer. It can be enough to really transform that act from a rude act to an act that allows you to show some consideration.
Etiquette and cell phones, the topic here in the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to an expert in Daniel Post Senning, who is the great-great-grandson of Emily Post, and is updating Emily Post's books and working on some of his own as well at the Emily Post Institute. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Maybe some questions, some comments, some observations about cell phone use, good or ill, in the past that you've observed. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You know, I went to a movie recently, Daniel, and noticed they didn't have the warning about not using your phone in the theater anymore. Has that finally gotten to where people understand those things shouldn't be used?
I hope so. That's one of those places where I think a decent respect to the people around you sort of it should inspire one to keep that device put away. It's funny, the etymology of the word etiquette is little sign or little ticket that told people how to behave. And I noticed when those little signs started to pop up at the start of a movie or in a coffee shop where the establishment wanted to be sure that people understood what the expectation was. And in those situations, I say you've really got to respect those signs. That's the person or the organization with standing to set the standards or establish the standards that people should adhere to. I hope that you're not seeing that sign means that people don't feel it's as necessary as it maybe once was.
I noticed the admonition to avoid talking about personal or confidential topics in a public place. I think everybody probably has a story to tell about somebody who really was just giving it to their partner over the phone. And everybody near them felt uncomfortable, and because it was probably in public transportation or something, couldn't get away. Certainly there's an admonition not to do that from the person on the phone. What should the rest of us do in those situations?
It can be really hard to ignore one half of a conversation. It's funny, a lot of the sorting and filtering that our ear does with background noise happens at a preconscious level. And believe it or not, some of that sorting is challenged when only one half of a conversation is present. And it can be difficult. And I do think that there is a certain courtesy to respecting other people's privacy. And you're I think, right to look at it as a two-way street. On the one hand, I think you don't insert yourself in other people's business. You do your best not to eavesdrop. And that also puts a little bit of the burden on other people not to be seduced by the illusion of privacy. Just because you're talking on the phone to someone who you're very close with doesn't mean that it's okay to ignore the people that you're physically present with or to lose track of the situation that you're in. And it is a bit of an imposition to bring those really personal or private discussions out into public because it's requiring something of the people around you. It's requiring them to ignore you. And that's definitely an imposition that's to my mind, a breach of some real basic courtesy.
I did see a very deft and justified intervention on Metrolink in L.A. 2 months ago because the person was just yapping away, and somebody said, you realize this is the quiet car.
Well,
she got quiet in a hurry.
I tell you, being in the etiquette advice business is a challenge because people often say, when I witness this kind of rude behavior, what should I do about it? And the temptation to challenge or confront someone about mm-hmm. their rude behavior really can be great. And I like to remind people that we're all guilty, we're all offenders, that you oftentimes don't have the standing to take that action. And a little good humor can sometimes can help, but it's not guaranteed to diffuse a situation. I like to take those moments to do a little introspection, to do a little self-reflection. I think they're great opportunities for me to remind myself that my behavior could use some evaluation, some improvement as well.
Yeah, the old don't pick up a stone until you're don't cast the first stone. Never drive and use your phone at the same time seems like a great safety thing, but it's in the realm of etiquette too.
Absolutely. If we say safety trumps etiquette, if someone's choking, knock the chair over, give them the Heimlich maneuver. And the same is true with a cell phone. I mean, distracted driving really is a danger, and people use these phones for things more than texting. Their navigation devices and tools, and a lot of our cars communicate, speak with, and interact with these devices. And you want to observe the laws. You want to be really careful. You want to hold yourself accountable. However important or satisfying that conversation can feel or seem in the moment, safety really does trump etiquette. You got to hold yourself accountable.
And then finally, private info can be forwarded, so don't text it. What kind of private info are you talking about?
Well, these devices get more and more powerful all the time, and oftentimes our entire business lives are right there in our pocket, along with our personal information. So it's both about keeping that device secure, but also being careful about how you use it. That's reply versus reply all, who you send information to. I worked with someone who had a coworker. I had a coworker who had a husband named Dan, and we got a lot of signals crossed. She had a lovely relationship with her husband. I knew a lot about it.
Oh, no. Oh, Dan and Dan, of course. Daniel Post Senning is at the Emily Post Institute. He is the great-great-grandson of Emily Post. He has co-authored the 18th edition of Emily Post's Etiquette and the 3rd edition of The Etiquette Advantage in Business, and he also hosts a podcast called Awesome Etiquette with his cousin. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
It was my pleasure.
All right, take care.